I don't want to do that. At all. Except there's no way I can pick a fight with Jeff right now. Not when he's freaking out about his girlfriend being in the hospital. I'll take care of it, I say roughly. Thanks. Jeff hangs up without another word. With a ragged breath, I text Grace to let her know I might be late for dinner, then head for the parking lot. I tap my fingers on the steering wheel during the entire drive to Munson. Dread gathers inside me, growing and tangling in my gut until it becomes a tight knot that brings a rush of nausea to my throat. I don't remember the last time I had to clean up one of my dad's messes. High school, I guess. Once I left for Briar, Jeff became the sole cleaner-upper. I kill the engine outside the bungalow and approach the front porch the way those paranormal experts in that shitty movie approached the ghost house. Wary, slow with trepidation. Please let him be alive and well. Yep. For all my selfish prayers about wanting my father to die, I can't stomach the thought of walking into the house and finding his body. I use my key to unlock the door, then step into the darkened front hall. Dad? I call out. No answer. Please let him be alive and well. I inch toward the living room, my heart racing a mile a minute. Please let him be. Oh, thank Christ, he's alive. But he's not well. Not by a long shot. My chest clenches so hard I'm surprised I don't crack a rib or two. Dad is sprawled on the carpet, face down and shirtless, his cheek resting in a pool of vomit. One arm is flung out to the side, the other is tucked close to him, cradling a fucking bottle of bourbon like it's a newborn baby. Jesus. Had he tried to protect his precious alcohol during his drunken tumble to the ground? I feel nothing as I take in the pitiful scene in front of me. An acrid odor floats toward me. I wrinkle my nose, almost gag when I realize it's urine. Urine and alcohol. The fragrance of my childhood. A part of me wants to turn on my heel and walk away. Walk away and not look back. Instead, I shrug out of my jacket, toss it on the armchair, and carefully approach my passed out father. Dad. He stirs but doesn't answer. Dad. An agonized moan ripples from his throat. Christ, his pants are soaked with piss. And bourbon leaks from the bottle, staining the beige carpet. Dad, I need to check if anything's broken. I run my hands over his body, starting from his feet and moving upward, making sure he didn't break any bones when he fell. My examination jolts him out of his haze. His eyelids pop open, revealing dilated pupils and a forlorn look that fractures a piece of my aching heart, the part of me that remembers idolizing him as a kid. He groans in panic. Where's your mother? Don't want her to see me like this. Crack. There goes another shard of my heart. At this rate, my chest will be a hollow cavern by the time I leave here. She's not home, I assure him. Then I snake my hands under his armpits so I can prop him into a sitting position. He looks dazed. I honestly don't think he knows where he is or who I am. She went grocery shopping? He slurs. Yeah, I lie. She won't be home for hours. Plenty of time to get you cleaned up, okay? He's swaying like crazy, and he's not even on his feet. The combined stench of vomit, alcohol, and piss makes my eyes water. Or maybe that's not why they're watering. Maybe I'm on the verge of tears because I'm about to haul my own father in a fireman hold and help him take a shower. And then I'm going to dress him as if he's a goddamn toddler and tuck him into bed. Maybe that's why my eyes are stinging. Don't tell her about this, Jeffy. She's gonna be so mad at me. Don't want her to be mad at me. Don't want to wake up Johnny. He starts mumbling incoherently. It's hard to breathe as I lift the stinking, blubbering mess that is my father into my arms and carry him to the bathroom at the end of the hall. Only one thought runs through my head. My brother is a saint. He's a goddamn saint. He's been doing this day in and day out since I left for Briar. He's been mopping up my dad's vomit and running the shop and taking care of shit without a single complaint. God, what's wrong with me? Fuck the NHL. Jeff deserves the chance to get out for a while, to travel with his girlfriend and live a normal life that doesn't involve stripping his own father naked and lifting him into the shower. My lungs are burning now, because cold reality has sunk in. Jesus Christ, this is my future. In less than a year, this will be my full-time job. I've never had a panic attack before. I'm not sure what they involve. Out of control heartbeat, is that a symptom? Cold, clammy hands that won't stop shaking? A windpipe that won't let a single burst of air through? Because all those things are happening to me right now, and it's scaring the shit out of me. Johnny? Dad blinks as the hot water sprays his head, plastering his dark hair to his forehead. When'd you get here? He staggers in the tiled stall, his gaze darting in all directions. Let me get you a beer. Have a beer with you, old man. I almost throw up. Okay, yeah, I think I might be having a panic attack. I'm 3 hours late to pick up Grace. My phone died when I was in Munson, and I don't have her number memorized because it's stored in my phone, so I couldn't even call her from the landline to let her know I'd be late. My panic has subsided somewhat, or maybe I've gone numb. All I know is that I need to see my girlfriend. I need to hold her and draw warmth from her body because goddamn, I feel like a block of ice right now. The porch light is on when I park in her father's driveway, but the yellow glow just ignites a spark of guilt. It's past 10 o'clock. I'm so fucking late, and she's had to wait around for hours. Practice, a cynical voice taunts, for all the times she'll have to do it next year. My lungs seize. Jesus, it's true. How many times will something like this happen once I'm in Munson full time? How many plans will I be late for or have to cancel altogether? How long before she dumps my ass for it? I push aside the fearful notion as I ring the bell. Grace's dad answers the door, a frown puckering his mouth when he sees me. Hi. My voice is hoarse, lined with regret. I'm sorry I couldn't make it to dinner, sir. I would have called, but my phone died and I... No. No way am I telling him what I was forced to endure tonight. Anyway, I'm here to take Grace back to campus. She already left, Mr. Ivers says ruefully. Ramona's mother drove them back. Disappointment crashes into me. Oh, Gracie waited as long as she could for you. Another frown, a clear rebuke. But she needed to go home and study. Shame funnels down my throat. Of course she waited, and of course she left. Okay. I swallow. I guess I'll head home then. Before I can go, Mr. Ivers asks, What's going on, John? The ache in my chest gets worse. Nothing. It's nothing, sir. I had a family emergency. He looks concerned. Is everything all right? I nod. Then I shake my head. Then I nod again. Christ, make up your fucking mind. Everything's fine. I lie. No, it's not. You're white as a sheet, and you look exhausted. He softens his tone. Tell me what's wrong, son. Maybe I can help. My face collapses. Oh, shit. Oh, fuck, why do you have to call me son? The sting in my eyes is unbearable. My throat squeezes shut. I need to get out of here. Why don't you come in? He urges. Well, sit down. I'll make some coffee. A wry smile lifts his lips. I'd offer you something stronger, but you're still a minor, and I have a strict rule about giving alcohol to— I lose it. I just fucking lose it. Yep, I bawl like an honest-to-God baby. Right there in front of Grace's father. He freezes. Only for a moment, and then he springs forward and puts his arms around me. He traps me in a hug I can't escape from. A solid wall of comfort I find myself sagging into. I'm so goddamn embarrassed, but I can't fight the tears anymore. I held them back in Munson, but the panic is back, and so is the fear. And Grace's father called me son, And holy hell, I'm a mess. I'm a total fucking mess.
Chapter 33, Grace. The moment I finish my abnormal psychology midterm, I race out of the lecture hall like I'm trying to outrun a forest fire. My father is not the kind of man who overreacts or dabbles in melodrama. He's incredibly level-headed and annoyingly straightforward, but he has the infuriating tendency to downplay a crisis instead of admitting when shit has hit the fan. So when he phoned me this morning and casually suggested that I should check in on my boyfriend today, I immediately knew something was wrong. Actually, I knew it even before the phone call. The apologetic text Logan sent me last night had triggered my concern, but when I'd pushed him, he insisted that everything was okay, claiming he had to stay with his dad longer than he'd anticipated. He'd also made sure to reiterate that he was truly sorry for not making it to dinner or being able to drive me home. I went to bed unable to fight the gnawing suspicion that something bad had happened, and now, combined with the vague heads up from my father, I'm certain of it. Which is why I opt to cab it to Logan's house instead of walking or taking the bus. I want to see him as soon as possible, before the crushing worry I'm feeling starts flashing worst-case scenarios in my head. As I settle in the back seat of the taxi, I pull out my phone and text Logan. Me. I'm on my way to your place. Nearly a minute goes by before he responds with, "Don't know if that's a good idea, babe. I'm in a lousy mood." Me. Fine. Then I'll cheer you up. Him. Not sure if you can. Me. Still gonna try. I tuck my cell away and bite my lip, wishing I knew what was going on with him. Obviously, it has something to do with his visit home last night, but what the hell had happened? A burst of anger goes off inside me. I'm running out of sympathy for Logan's father. I really am, and it's making me question how good of a therapist I'm going to be. Granted, I don't plan on specializing in addiction issues, but what does it say about me that I can't feel any compassion for Logan's alcoholic father? Fuck. And now is not the time to be second-guessing my career path. I'm only equipped to deal with one crisis at a time. The cab driver has to stop at the curb in front of Logan's house because the driveway is full. Logan's pickup and Garrett's Jeep are side by side, with Dean's sporty something or other and Hannah's borrowed Toyota behind them. When I ring the bell, it isn't Logan who lets me in, but Tucker. A groove of dismay digs into his forehead as he closes the door behind me. "Are you guys in a fight or something?" he asks in a low voice. "No." I suddenly feel cold. Did he say we were? "No, but he's been rude and bitchy all morning. Dean thought maybe the two of you were fighting." "We're not," I say firmly. Then an unnerving thought occurs to me. Has he been drinking? "Of course not. It's 1:30 in the afternoon." Tucker sounds confused. "He's upstairs. Last I checked, he was working on his marketing midterm." His answer relieves me, but I'm not sure why. Logan has told me on numerous occasions that he doesn't drink when he's upset. I know he's afraid he might have inherited his father's addictive tendencies, and suddenly I feel like a jerk for asking Tucker that question in the first place. I'll go up and talk to him. Maybe he'll tell me what's bugging him. I leave Tucker in the front hall and head up to Logan's room, where I experience another rush of relief. He looks okay. Short, dark hair looks the same. Blue eyes are alert. Sexy muscles rippling beneath his sweats and t-shirt. There are no outward signs of injury, but when our gazes lock, there's a world of pain in his expression. "Hey," I say softly, walking over to give him a kiss. "What's going on?" His lips brush mine, but the kiss lacks its usual warmth.
"Your dad called you, huh?"
he says wryly. "Yep." A shadow crosses his eyes.
"What'd he say?" Hardly anything. He told me you stopped by last night, that he got the sense you were upset and that I should check on you. I search his face. What happened in Munson?
Nothing.
Logan?
It was nothing, babe.
He lets out a tired breath.
Or at least nothing out of the ordinary.
I take his hand. God, it's like ice. Whatever went down last night, he's still exhibiting the effects of it. Sit down. I have to forcibly tug his powerful body beside me on the bed, but even after he submits, he stares straight ahead instead of meeting my eyes. Will you please tell me what happened?
Jesus, what does it matter?
Because it matters, John. I start to feel aggravated. Clearly you're upset about it, and I think it'll help if you talk about it. His bitter laughter echoes between us.
Talking about it won't achieve a damn thing. But fine, you want to know what happened last night? I saw my future. That's what happened.
I flinch at the sharpness of his tone. What do you mean?
I mean I saw my fucking future. I traveled forward in time. I got a visit from the ghost of Christmas future. How else do you want me to phrase it, Grace?
My spine stiffens. You don't have to be sarcastic. I get it.
No, you don't. You don't get it. I have no life after I graduate. No future. But I'm doing it for my brother, because Jeff has dealt with it for almost 4 years now, and now it's my turn, and I don't fucking like it, but I'm gonna suck it up and move back home because he's my goddamn father and he needs my help.
His hoarse outburst cracks my heart in two.
I know what it'll do to me,
he continues, sounding more and more despondent.
I know it'll make me miserable, and I'll probably grow to hate my dad. And I'll eventually lose you.
What? I interrupt in shock. What makes you think you'll lose me? He looks my way, his blue eyes filled with regret.
Because you'll wake up one day and realize you deserve better. Don't you see? Last night was a preview of what it's going to be like. We'll have plans, but I'll end up having to work late, or my dad will get wasted and fall down the stairs, and then I'll have to cancel on you, or worse, keep you waiting like I did last night. How long do you think you'll put up with that?
Disbelief hurtles through me. You honestly think I'm going to break up with you because you might be late a couple times? Logan doesn't respond, but his stony expression tells me that, yes, he does believe that. Doesn't your brother have a girlfriend he's been with forever? I point out.
Kylie,
he mumbles. Well, did Kylie break up with him? No, she didn't, because she loves him, and she's willing to stand by him no matter what. I'm angry now, so angry I shoot to my feet, fighting the urge to smack some sense into him. So what makes you think I won't stand by you? His silence irks the living fuck out of me. You know what, John? Screw you. I struggle to control my breathing. Clearly, you don't know me at all. If you think I'm the kind of person who would give up on a relationship the moment it hits a few obstacles. He finally answers, his voice low and sullen.
Can we please not talk about this anymore?
Unfucking believable. I gape at him, unable to fathom what I'm hearing, and unable to listen to it for even a second longer. You're right, we won't talk about it anymore. I grab my purse from where I dropped it on the floor and sling the strap over my shoulder. Because I'm leaving. That gets his attention. Frowning, he slowly rises to his feet.
Grace.
I cut him off. No. I'm not listening to this bullshit anymore. I'm going to leave you to your sulking, and maybe when you're finished with your one-man pity party, we can actually have a rational conversation. I'm spitting mad as I march toward the door. And just in case my reaction to your idiocy didn't make it clear where I stand with us, Then let me spell it out for you. I whirl around to scowl at him. I love you, you stupid jackass. Then I storm out of his room and slam the door behind me.
Logan. It takes me much, much longer than it should to snap out of the shocked trance I've fallen into. My mouth keeps opening and closing, my eyelids blinking at a rapid pace as I stare at the door Grace just tore out of. She's absolutely right. I am a jackass. And I did doubt her commitment to our relationship. And, wait, she loves me? My mouth opens again, and stays open. Agape, in fact, because her last words have finally registered in my extremely idiotic brain. She loves me, even after I indicted her for a hypothetical future breakup, and pretty much told her she was going to desert me when the going gets tough. She still told me she loved me. And I let her walk away. What the hell is the matter with me? I bolt out of my room and take the stairs two at a time. There's no way Grace could have called a cab or made it to the bus stop yet, which means she's probably on the front stoop or nearing the end of the street, which means I can still catch her. I skid into the front hall like a goddamn cartoon character, only to freeze when I find Garrett at the door. Then I hear a car engine from outside, and my heart hits the floor like a sack of bricks. Hannah's driving her home, Garrett says quietly. I curse in frustration, flinging open the door in time to see the retreating taillights of Hannah's car. Damn it. I spin around and hurry back upstairs, where I grab my phone and dial Grace's number. After it goes straight to voicemail, I shoot off a quick text. Me. Baby, please come back. I'm such an ass. Need to make this right. There's a long delay. 5 seconds. 10. And then she texts back. Her. I need some time to digest your stupidity. I'll call you when I'm ready to talk. Damn it. I drag both hands over my scalp, fighting the urge to strangle myself to death. Why do I always screw up when it comes to this girl? Footsteps echo in the hallway, and when Garrett appears, I stifle another curse. I can't deal with a lecture right now, man. I really can't. Wasn't gonna lecture you. He shrugs. Just wanted to see if you're okay. I sink down on the edge of the bed, slowly shaking my head. Not in the slightest. I fucked up again. Damn right you did. My best friend props his elbow against the wall and sighs. Wellesley and I heard her reaming you out. I think the whole neighborhood heard it, comes Tucker's voice. He enters my room and leans against the dresser. Except maybe Dean. But that's because he's balls deep in a puck bunny down in the living room. I groan. Seriously? Why can't he ever fuck in his room? Do we really want to discuss that perv's sex life? Tuck counters. Because I don't think that should be at the top of your priority list right now. He makes a good point. At the moment, my only priority is fixing things with Grace. Christ, I shouldn't have spewed all that bullshit. I hadn't even meant it, at least not the part about her breaking up with me. That was my fear talking. And she's right. I was having a pity party. I was so freaked out about everything that happened with my dad last night, not to mention everything that happened afterward, when I cried in her father's arms. I cried in her father's arms. I let out another groan. What if I lost her for good this time? Garrett and Tucker instantly shake their heads. You didn't, Garrett assures me. How can you be so sure of that? Because she told you she loves you. You stupid jackass, Tucker adds with a grin. I love you, you stupid jackass. Not the words a man wants to hear. The first three, sure. The last three? Pass. How do I fix this? I ask, sighing. Quick. Write her another poem, Garrett suggests. I scowl at him. No, I think G's onto something, Tuck says. I think the only way to save this is to bust out another grand gesture. What else was on her list? Nothing, I moan. I did everything on the list, Tucker shrugs. Then come up with something else. A grand gesture? I'm a guy, damn it. I need direction. Is Wellesley coming back here? I ask Garrett. He smirks at my pleading tone. Even if she is, I'm not letting you pick her brain. You're gonna have to fix this one all on your own. There's a pause, and then, "You stupid jackass," my friends say in unison.
Chapter 34, Grace. I'm still fuming as I walk into the media building several hours after storming out of Logan's house. Normally, I don't stay angry for long, but this time I'm having trouble expelling the volatile energy coursing inside me. I can't believe he actually thinks I'll dump him once he's in Munson full time, that I'll throw him away like an old busted up toy and find something shiny and new to play with. Jerk. When I burst into the station, I spot Morris in the producer's booth, balancing the telephone handset on his shoulder as he jots something down on a notepad. I frown, noticing that Pace and Evelyn are already in their seats in the other booth. Pace snaps his earphones over the backward baseball cap on his head, while Evelyn bends over a sheet of paper in concentration. Am I late? I glance at the clock on the far wall. Nope. I'm early, actually. So why is Morris in my booth? I take a step forward, only to halt when Daisy wanders out of the back corridor. She pushes her bangs off her forehead, they're neon blue now, and grins sheepishly when she sees me. Hey, I greet my roommate. What are you doing here? She doesn't usually hang out at the station unless she's supposed to host or produce, and I know for a fact she's scheduled to do neither today. Hey. For some reason, she looks almost guilty. I just popped in to drop off coffee for everyone. Since when are you the station gopher? I narrow my eyes. Your shirt is inside out. I pause. And backwards. She glances at her tank top, wincing when she notices the tag sticking out from her collarbone. Then her eyes flit toward the producer's booth. I follow her gaze, gasping when I find Morris grinning at us. Holy shit. You and Morris are hooking up? Daisy sighs. Maybe. My anger at Logan is momentarily eclipsed by her news. Our schedules are so hectic that Daisy and I are hardly ever in our room at the same time, which works out great for when I want privacy, but it also means I miss out on girl talk and up-to-date gossip. Since when? I squeal in excitement. A couple weeks now? She shrugs. I didn't tell you because we've both been so busy. You're cool with it, though, right? Of course. Why wouldn't I be? You know, because you and Morris went out. I laugh. Once. And my behavior didn't exactly warrant a second date. I think this is awesome. You totally just made my day. And trust me, my day has been shit. So it really needed to be made. Oh no! What happened? My bad mood returns like an unwanted rash. I got in a fight with Logan, and that's all I'm saying on the subject because if I talk about it right now, it'll just piss me off again, and then I'll be too distracted to produce Dumb and Dumber's show. We both glance at the main booth where Evelyn is using the reflection on her water glass to check her makeup, dabbing delicately at her eyeshadow. Pace is engrossed with his phone, his chair tipped back so far that I predict a very loud disaster in the near future. God, I love them, Daisy says with a snicker. I don't think I've ever met two more self-absorbed people. Morris saunters out of the booth and wanders over to us. He notices Daisy's shirt and says, Sweetheart, we're at work. Show some decorum. Says the guy who ripped this shirt off me in the supply closet. Rolling her eyes, she takes a step away. I'm going to make myself presentable in the bathroom. I do it out here, but I'm scared Dumber might take a picture and post it on a porn site. Wait, the name's Dumb and Dumber?
actually correspond to each of them? Morris says in surprise. I thought it was more of a general thing. Which one is dumber? The second the question leaves his mouth, a muffled crash reverberates from the booth and we all turn to see Pace tangled up on the floor. Yep, the guy who spent an hour regaling me about his cow-tipping days back in Iowa tipped himself right over. From behind the glass, Pace bounces to his feet, notices us staring, and mouths the words, I'm okay. Morris sighs.
I withdraw the question.
As Daisy leaves to fix her shirt, Morris casually follows me to the booth door.
First caller's already on hold, he tells me. I screened her and wrote her info on the sheet.
My forehead creases. Did you open the lines before I got here? He wears a sheepish look.
Not on purpose. I was calling my dad and pressed the wrong button, and then the phone rang and I was already in there, so I took the caller's info. She's got an urgent G-spot question for Evelyn, so this should be interesting.
Isn't it always? I say with a grin. I take my seat and conduct my pre-show check. The blinking lights on the phone tell me there are more callers waiting to be screened. I chat with the first one, verify his motives, then send him back on hold. I'm about to screen the next one when Pace and Evelyn kick off the show.
What's up, Bruskies?
Pace greets the radio audience.
You're listening to What You Need with Pace and Evelyn.
Cringing, Evelyn leans into her microphone.
Before we start, I'd like to ask everyone to speak in their indoor voices today because I am currently sporting a brutal hangover.
She glares at her co-host.
I'm talking to you, asswipe.
And so it begins.
Let's chat with our first caller,
Pace says cheerfully.
Who are we talking to right now?
Since I'm not eager to listen to Evelyn talk about G-spots, I lean forward to take another call, only to freeze in my chair when a familiar voice wafts out of the speaker over the door.
Hey, this is Logan.
My pulse speeds up. Oh, God. What the hell is he doing?
Tell us what you need, my man.
My boyfriend audibly clears his throat.
Well, here's the thing, Pace. And Evelyn. Hey, Evelyn, female opinion definitely appreciated. I'm hoping you guys can give me some advice on how to win my girl back.
Pace chuckles into the mic.
Oh, boy. Someone found themselves in the doghouse?
Big time, Logan confirms.
What'd you do to piss off your lady? We need the deets before we dispense the wisdom.
Every inch of me tenses as I await Logan's response. God, I can't believe he's about to air our dirty laundry on this stupid campus show.
Long story short, I projected my own fears and insecurities on her and made some presumptions that I probably shouldn't. Gonna stop you right there, broski.
Pace says, rubbing his scruffy beard growth in dismay.
You just threw around a lot of big words. How about you dumb it down for us? I mean, for peeps who might not be good with the English language. Shout out to all our ESL listeners out there.
A laugh rips out of my throat. Oh, Pace, never change. Logan sounds like he's trying not to laugh as he rephrases himself.
Bottom line, I screwed up. I said some stupid shit I didn't mean. It pissed her off, and she stormed off.
Pace sighs.
Bitches be cray.
Hey, Logan, Evelyn drawls.
Yeah?
You sound hot. Are you sure you even want this chick? Because I'm free tonight if you're interested.
A strangled cough fills the airwaves.
Thanks for the offer, but yeah, I want her.
He pauses.
I'm in love with her.
My heart soars like a kite in the wind. He's in love with me? Then it sinks like a stone. Wait, what if he's only saying it because I said I loved him?
I've been in love with her for a few months now.
He continues, and his husky confession reinflates my heart.
I didn't tell her because I didn't want to scare her off by saying it too soon. Dude, you should have told her.
I'm startled by Pace's earnest response, touched even, at least until he finishes that sentence.
If you say it right off the bat, they drop their panties super fast. Means you don't have to put as much work into bagging them.
Uh-huh, Logan says as if he's in agreement, but I've known him long enough to be able to pick up on his sarcasm.
Anyway, this girl, she's the love of my life. She's smart and funny and unbelievably compassionate. She forgives people even when they don't deserve it. She... Good lay?
Pace interrupts.
Oh yeah, the best.
God, my cheeks are on fire now.
But the sex is just icing,
Logan says softly.
It's everything else that matters most.
A shadow crosses my peripheral vision. I turn my head, expecting to see Daisy or Morris on the other side of the glass door. My breath hitches when my gaze locks with Logan's. He's on his cell phone, wearing faded jeans and his hockey jacket, and his blue eyes shine with sincerity. Our esteemed hosts notice him as well, and a gasp echoes in the air.
Wait, we've been talking to John Logan?
Evelyn shrieks.
Wait, you're talking about Gretchen?
Pace exclaims, his gaze darting like a ping-pong ball from me to Logan.
No, I'm talking about Grace.
Logan says, smiling at me through the glass.
Grace Elizabeth Ivers, the woman I love.
I don't know whether to stand up on my chair and shout out, I love you too, or hide under the desk in embarrassment. Big public displays freak me out. If I owned a cloak of invisibility, I'd wear it every time a birthday or some other major event rolled around because I hate being the center of attention. But I can't tear my eyes off Logan. I can't breathe or move or form a single thought other than he loves me.
Anyway, I'm hanging up now.
Logan tells the hosts,
I'm pretty sure I can take it from here.
The line cuts off and I shoot a panicky glance at the switchboard. Shit, the show is still on the air. I'm supposed to put on the next caller. To my relief, Morris appears, giving Logan a friendly thump on the arm as he hurries into the producer's booth.
Go, Morris orders. I'll cover the rest of the show.
Are you sure? He grins.
That was always the plan. Who do you think screened the call, Gretch?
He points to the door.
Go.
I don't need to be told twice. I hurry out of the booth and throw my arms around Logan's strong shoulders. I cannot believe you just did that, I blurt out. As his laughter tickles the top of my head, his arms slide down to my hips, large hands curling around my waist.
I figured nothing short of a grand gesture would convince you how shitty I feel about what happened earlier.
I pull back, tipping my head to meet his gorgeous eyes. You should feel shitty, I chastise. I can't believe you said all that stuff. I don't plan on ever breaking up with you.
Good, because I'm never breaking up with you.
He brings one hand to my cheek, stroking it with infinite tenderness.
Actually, I think I'm gonna marry you one day.
Shock jolts through me.
What?
One day, he repeats when he sees my expression.
I mean it, Grace. I'm in this for the long haul. You still have 2 years left at Briar, and I'll be in Munson during that time. But I promise you, I'll come see you as often as I can. Every available second I have will be yours.
His voice thickens.
I'm yours.
I swallow a lump of emotion. Did you really mean what you told Pace just now?
You mean that I love you?
I nod.
I meant every damn word, gorgeous.
He hesitates, visibly swallows.
Hannah was trying to describe love to me last semester. She said it feels like your heart is about to overflow, and that when you love someone, you need them more than anything else in the world, more than food or water or air. That's how I feel about you. I need you. I can't stand the thought of being without you.
He releases a shaky breath.
You're the last person I think about before I go to sleep, and the first person I think about when I open my eyes in the morning. You're it for me, baby.
The heartfelt words unleash a flood of warmth inside me, but despite that, I can't help but gaze at him with profound sorrow. What about everything you said earlier about your future and how you're going to be miserable and hate your life? I bite my lower lip. I don't want that to happen, Logan. I don't want you to turn bitter and hateful, and I trail off. His fingers tremble against my cheek.
I won't. Or at least I'll try not to. It's gonna suck, Grace. We both know that. But I promise not to let it destroy me or us.
A crack wobbles his voice.
And it won't be forever, just until Jeff comes back and takes over again. The next few years, it'll probably feel like I'm wandering around in a pitch-black tunnel, but there is a light at the end of it. And as long as you're with me, there'll be a light inside of it, too. Without you, it'll just be darkness.
I burst out laughing, and a hurt expression fills his eyes.
You think that's funny?
He says sadly. No, I was thinking it's a damn shame you didn't put everything you just said into the poem you wrote me. A tentative smile lifts his mouth.
You like that, huh?
I loved it. My heart constricts. I love you. The smile widens.
Even after I acted like a stupid jackass today?
Yep.
Even though I'll probably act like a stupid jackass again? Because I can't promise not to. Apparently, I'm hopeless when it comes to relationships.
No, you're not. I ease up on my tiptoes and kiss the corner of his jaw. You're a bit inept, sure, but you're also ridiculously talented when it comes to romantic gestures. So, if you screw up again, I'm 90% sure you'll be able to win me back.
Only 90%?
He looks upset. Well, it depends how badly you screw up. I mean, if it's picking a fight with me like you did today, then obviously we'll be able to work through it. But if I'm over at your house and I go down to the basement and find a serial killer lair, no promises.
Jesus Christ, what is your obsession with serial killers?
He grins.
Hey, that should be your specialty, profiling killers.
Damn, not a bad idea. I decide to put a pin in that, then loop my arms around his neck again. Question. His eyes twinkle.
Hit me.
Can we kiss now, or are you still groveling?
Depends on whether my girlfriend requires more groveling.
Nope. I require this. I cup the back of his head and yank his mouth down on mine. The kiss is magic. It's always magic when we're together. As our tongues meet in a reckless tangle, my mind spins and my body sings. Love you, Johnny, I murmur into his lips. His laughter warms my face. Then he brushes his mouth over mine and whispers,
Love you too, gorgeous.
Chapter 35, Logan. The next morning, I wake up with Grace snuggled up beside me, and it's the best fucking feeling in the whole fucking world. She slept at my place last night, and we stayed up until 4 a.m., alternating between talking, cuddling, and having sex. And not the hollow, meaningless kind I've been indulging in since I started college. Sex with Grace means something. It doesn't make me feel hollow, but full, brimming with emotions I can't even give labels to. Grace stirs in my arms, and I absently toy with a strand of her hair, twirling it around my fingers. "Morning," she says, yawning as she lifts her head. "Morning.
What time is it?"
10:30.
"Oh no, we slept in? Don't you have practice?"
"Not for a few hours."
"Oh, okay, good. We stayed up way too late last night."
She hops out of bed and starts searching the room for her clothes. I grin because I'm the one responsible for why her pants are flung on top of the dresser, and why her lacy panties are scrunched up in a ball across the room. So sue me. Groveling makes me horny.
"Is it cool if I invite Morris and Daisy to the game tomorrow?"
She eases her panties up her smooth, bare legs, and I'm so distracted by the sight that I forget what she asked a nanosecond after she asks it. My cock hardens beneath the sheets, tenting up as if trying to get Grace's attention. She sighs when she notices the campsite on the bed.
"I swear, you've got sex on the brain every second of the day."
"Pretty much," I agree, then waggle my eyebrows. "Why are you getting dressed? Wouldn't you rather come here and sit on my dick?" She rolls her eyes.
"Sure. If you want me to pee all over you."
When I open my mouth, she raises a hand in warning.
"And don't you dare say you're into that, because I'm not incorporating pee into our sex life."
I flop onto my side and laugh hysterically.
"Relax,"
I stutter between chuckles. "Golden showers don't get me off." Grace snickers.
"Thank God."
After she ducks into the hall to use the bathroom, I reluctantly drag myself out of bed and track down a pair of sweatpants. I'm thinking of suggesting the diner for breakfast. After last night's strenuous sexcapades, I could really go for a huge greasy platter of bacon and sausage, and Coach will murder me if I show up to practice sluggish and crashing from a grease high. Frickin' in-season nutrition regimen. I pace around as I wait for Grace to come out of the bathroom, because now I'm the one who needs to piss like a racehorse. My buzzing phone serves as a distraction from my about-to-explode bladder, but when my brother's number flashes on the screen, my good morning mood fades away.
"Hey,"
Jeff says after I pick up,
"can you come by today?"
I stifle a groan. "I've got practice at 1:30, man."
"Come now, then. We'll be done long before that."
"Done what?" I ask warily.
"No idea. Dad says he has something important to tell us, but he won't give me any more details than that. Marty's covering for me in the shop right now, so get your ass over here. It won't take long."
I hang up, feeling even warier than before. He has something important to tell us? What the hell could it be? We haven't had a family meeting in... ever. My father has never sat us down for a talk, serious or otherwise. I'm still frowning when Grace reappears, and concern instantly creases her features.
"Everything okay?"
I slowly shake my head. "My dad wants to sit down with me and Jeff today."
"Today? But you have practice."
"He said it won't take long. He just needs to tell us something."
"Tell you what?"
"I don't know." She goes quiet for a moment.
"Do you want me to go with you?"
I'm touched by the offer, but I shake my head again. "I don't think he'll want anyone else there."
"Obviously,"
she says with a smile.
"I figured I could wait in the car. That way, if it's something bad, you'll have someone to talk to on the drive back."
I hesitate. I'm not sure I want to take the risk of Grace running into my dad, but I also don't want to be alone. "Okay," I answer, releasing a breath. "But only if you stay in the car. I don't know what kind of state he'll be in when we get there." We're both somber as we leave the house 15 minutes later, and the weather matches our foreboding expressions. The sky is overcast, the metallic scent in the air hinting at a downpour. My uneasiness grows the closer we get to Munson. By the time I reach the end of the long driveway and park in front of the bungalow, my nerves have formed a solid, immovable ball in the pit of my stomach. "I'll be right back," I tell Grace, leaning in to kiss her cheek. She shakes her head. "Take your time." Unzipping her canvas bag, she pulls out a psych textbook and holds it up. "I'll be fine out here, I promise. So don't try to rush on my account, okay?" I exhale shakily. "Okay." A minute later, I walk through the front door without knocking, flinching when the familiar smell of stale beer fills my nostrils. I swear it's like the walls in this house are soaked with alcohol, slowly releasing the sour odor into the air. "John?" My brother's voice drifts through the hall. "We're in the kitchen." I keep my shoes on, a habit left over from childhood. I've stepped on far too many puddles on the floors and carpets of this house and soaked my socks, puddles that weren't always of the alcoholic beverage variety. I know something's up the second I enter the kitchen. Jeff and Dad are at the weathered oak table, sitting across from each other. Jeff is sipping a coffee. My father has a long neck bottle of Bud in front of him, both hands wrapped around the base. "Johnny, sit down," Dad says. The beer isn't a promising sign, but at least he looks and sounds relatively sober. And by sober, I mean not passed out in a pool of his own vomit. I sink into the nearest chair without a word, studying my dad's face, waiting, studying Jeff's face, waiting. "Chad Jensen came to see me yesterday." My head swings back toward my father. "What? Are you serious? Why the hell would Coach talk to my father?" Dad nods. "He called ahead, asked if he could stop by for a chat. I said, sure, why not? And he came by yesterday evening." I'm still battling my shock. Coach Jensen drove out to Munson and met with my father? "I didn't know about it," Jeff speaks up hastily, obviously misconstruing my expression. "I was over at Kylie's when he stopped by. And Dad only told me about it this morning." I ignore Jeff's assurances. "What did he want?" I ask suspiciously. Dad's cheeks hollow as if he's grinding his teeth. "To discuss possible solutions." "Solutions for what?" "For next year." His gaze stays locked with mine. "He assured me he wasn't trying to be disrespectful or overstep his boundaries. That he understood the car accident was difficult for me and my family. And why you're needed at the shop after you graduate." My father's hands tighten around the beer bottle. "But he was hoping there might be some way for you to play hockey next year, while still helping out your family." My hands curl into fists, and I press them tight to the table, trying to control my temper. I know Coach meant well, but what the hell? He also asked me why I didn't go on disability, if my injuries from the accident were bad enough to prevent me from working. Fucking Jensen. He absolutely overstepped his boundaries. "Your coach has no idea I'm a drunk, does he?" Dad mutters. And now he's no longer looking at me. He's staring at his hands. "No, he doesn't," I mutter back. "I only told him about the accident. And that was just because I needed to tell him something so he'd get off my case about not entering the draft." Dad raises his gaze to mine again. "You should have told me you didn't declare. What difference would it have made?" "A huge one," he snaps. "It's bad enough that I woke up the other morning wearing clean underwear and all tucked into bed like a fucking child, with the knowledge that my 21-year-old son is the one who put me there." His head shifts to Jeff. "And that my other son is running my business because I'm too much of a mess to do it myself. But now you're telling me you're passing up the chance to play for the goddamn Bruins so you can take care of my sorry ass?" He's breathing hard, his hands shaking so wildly the bottle is close to toppling over. He lifts it to his lips and takes a hurried sip before slamming it on the table. Jeff and I exchange a wary look. Seeing him drink brings identical frowns to our faces, which causes Dad to groan in anguish. "God damn it, don't look at me like that. I have to fucking drink this.
because the last time I tried to quit cold turkey, I ended up in the hospital with seizures. I suck in a shocked breath. So does Jeff. Dad looks from me to my brother, then addresses us in a voice that rings with despair. I'm going back to rehab. The announcement is greeted with silence. I'm serious. I spoke to someone at the state facility I went to last time and asked to be put on the waiting list, but they told me a slot opened up 5 minutes before I called. He snorts. If that's not divine intervention, I don't know what is. My brother and I remain quiet. We've heard this speech before, many times before, and we've learned not to get our hopes up anymore. Sensing our misgivings, Dad sharpens his tone. It'll stick this time. I'm going to make sure of it. There's a beat, and then Jeff clears his throat. How long is the program? 6 months. My eyebrows fly up. That long? With my history, they think that would be best. Inpatient? Jeff asks. Yeah. Dad's features grow pained. 2 weeks for the detox. Christ, I'm not looking forward to that part. Then he shakes his head, as if snapping himself out of it. But I'll do it. I'll do it, and it'll stick. You know why? Because I'm your father. Shame pours off him in palpable waves. My kids shouldn't be taking care of me. I should be taking care of you. He gives me a hard look. You shouldn't be giving up your dreams because of me. He turns to Jeff. And neither should you. That's all good and well, Jeff says, sounding tired. But what about the garage? Even if the program sticks, you still won't be able to work because of your legs. You can handle the administrative stuff, sure. But not the labor. I'll apply for disability. Dad pauses. And I'm going to sell the business. My brother does not look pleased about that. Me? I'm still reeling from everything else he's just told us. Kylie and I are only traveling for a couple years, Jeff says unhappily. I want to work here when we get back. Then we'll hire someone to run it until you're ready to come back. But that someone won't be your brother, Jeffrey. And it won't be you, if you don't want it to be. He slides his chair back and gingerly gets to his feet, then reaches for the cane leaning against the wall. I know you boys have heard this before. I know it'll take a lot more than a few promises to prove I'm serious about this. He's right about that. The center is picking me up in an hour, he says brusquely. I have to go pack. Jeff and I stare at each other again. Son of a bitch. He's really going to rehab. I don't expect a hug goodbye, but it'd be nice if you boys called me every once in a while. Let me know how you're doing. He glances at Jeff. We'll talk about the shop when I'm done packing. Not sure if we should close up while I'm gone, or if you want to stick around a while longer. If we do close, I'd appreciate it if you could finish up the current work orders for this week. Looking slightly dazed, my brother manages a nod. And you, my father's bloodshot eyes zero in on me. You better make it to that Providence practice. Jensen said it's pretty much a tryout, so don't screw it up. I've been silent for so long it takes me a moment to find my voice. I won't, I say hoarsely. Good. I expect you to tell me about it when I call you in 2 weeks. You probably won't hear from me before that. Not during the detox. His voice is equally hoarse. Now get out of here, John. Your brother says you've got shit to do today. Jeffrey, we'll talk shortly. A moment later, he's gone, and we hear his labored footsteps in the hallway, heading toward his bedroom. Suddenly, I feel as dazed as Jeff looks, and once again, we gape at each other for several long moments. You think he's for real? Jeff asks. Sure seems like it. Old doubts creep in, bringing a cagey note to my voice. Think he'll manage to stay on the wagon this time? Fuck. I hope so. Yeah, me too. But I've been burned by my father too many times in the past, fooled by his promises and his supposed resolve. The cynic in me thinks we'll be having this same conversation in a year or two or five. And maybe we will. Maybe he'll sober up, come home in 6 months and start drinking again. Or maybe not. Either way, I'm free. The realization slams into me with the force of a tidal wave, nearly knocking me out of my chair. I won't have to live here in May. Won't have to work here. Dad'll be on disability. The garage will either be sold or managed by someone else until Jeff is ready to take over. And I'll be free. I shoot to my feet, startling my brother. I have to go. My girlfriend's waiting for me in the car. He blinks.
You have a girlfriend?
Yep. I'll introduce you another time. I've really gotta go.
John?
His voice stops me before I reach the doorway. Yeah?
You'll give me a signed jersey when you make the team, right?
A smile stretches across my entire face. Damn right I will. I leave the kitchen with the sound of my brother's laughter at my back and sprint out of the house. From the porch, I see Grace in the pickup, her feet raised on the dashboard and her nose buried in her textbook. Her peripheral vision must have caught the front door flying open, because she lifts her head and turns it toward the porch. And I must still be grinning like a fool, because a little smile curves her sexy lips. I quickly descend the porch steps and make my way to the truck. It's still gloomy out. The trees are swaying ominously. The clouds are a thick, dark mass undulating overhead. The sky is more black than gray. And yet, my future has never looked brighter.
Epilogue. Grace. 2 years later. Man, this executive suite at TD Garden is fancy pants. I feel like a queen reigning over her kingdom as I lean forward in my plush leather seat and sweep my gaze over the massive arena. Thousands of screaming hockey fans fill the seats, an endless sea of faces, a blur of black and yellow occasionally broken up by the white and turquoise of the Sharks fans who happen to be in attendance. This is so intense, Hannah whispers in my ear, and I know she's trying to keep her voice down so the three beer-sipping wives standing 5 feet away don't tease us again about our novice status, or mine, at least. This is Logan's first season with Boston. He played in the AHL for a year after college until the Bruins finally decided he was ready and signed him. Since Garrett had an amazing rookie season last year, I figured Hannah would be an old pro by now. But when we were being led into the private suite, she confessed that she'd sat in the club seats last year because she'd been too intimidated to sit up here alone. We haven't stopped marveling since we arrived. Each time the other people milling in the suite turned their heads, the two of us have oohed and awed about something else. The private bar across the room, the gourmet spread on the granite counter, the seats, the view. No detail has gone unoohed or unawed. I'm hoping we'll learn to restrain ourselves after we've had a few games under our belts, but I'm not sure I'll ever get used to this kind of luxury. A part of me keeps expecting security to show up and throw us out, I whisper back. I've never felt so out of place. She laughs softly. Me too, but I'm sure we'll adjust. Her green eyes focus on the rink below. The players are still warming up, and I know the moment her gaze lands on Garrett because her entire face lights up. I'm pretty sure the same thing happens to me when I look at Logan. Do you think they'll get a lot of playing time? I think it over. Logan, probably not. Garrett? Absolutely. He and Lukov were an unstoppable force of nature last season. Thinking of Shane Lukov brings a smile to my face. When I met him in person for the first time this summer, he spent 10 minutes teasing me mercilessly about the endorsement he gave and how he credits himself for my relationship with his new teammate. Okay, I need to ask you something, and no bullshitting me. Hannah leans in close again. Do you really love hockey now, or is that just the line you're feeding Logan? I press my lips together to keep from laughing. Well, I don't
hate it, and I definitely don't find it as boring anymore, but I lower my voice. I'd still rather watch football. She snorts. The dark-haired woman who slides into the seat beside me is not as amused. Shame on you, Grace Ivers, Logan's mother chides. I thought we'd succeeded in converting you. Sorry, Jean, not yet. She sighs. Well, I'm encouraged by the yet. Means there's still hope that you'll see the error of your ways. Hannah and I laugh. God, I adore Logan's mom. She's sweet and funny and so damn supportive of her sons. Her husband, David, on the other hand, is one of the blandest men I've ever met in my life, but he's so good to Jean that I can't help but like him. And if I'm being honest, Logan's father is growing on me too. He's been sober for nearly 2 years now, and he seems determined to keep it that way. Though sometimes it's hard to reconcile the charming man I've gotten to know with the drunken mess Logan used to have to scrape off the floor. Since Jean still refuses to have contact with Ward, Logan's parents have agreed to alternate their visits to his games. Same rule applies to their visits to our apartment, which is located halfway between Hastings and Boston, making it only a 30-minute commute for each of us. Once I graduate this year, we're planning on finding a place in the city. Garrett and Hannah already live here in a gorgeous brownstone I helped Hannah decorate. It's so funny, Hannah muses. Garrett told me that he and Logan have talked about the two of them in Bruins jerseys ever since freshman year. And now it's actually happening. She smiles. I guess some dreams really do come true. I follow her gaze, a smile touching my lips as I watch the man I love in the uniform he loves, flying across the ice to the roar of the crowd. Yep, I answer softly. I guess they do.
This has been an Audible Studios production of The Mistake, Book 2. In the Off-Campus series, written by L. Kennedy, performed by Lorelei Avalon and Lee Samuels. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright, 2015 by L. Kennedy. Production copyright, 2019 by Audible Studios. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
If you enjoyed this audiobook, be sure to get more books in the Off-Campus series today.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.